It's Friday. Do you know where your IT guys are? We don't. It's Patch and Switch. And now, two guys who should be at the top of your fantasy IT admin roster. It's Patch and Switch. Where's our IT support?
I know, man. It's like, we have crack professionals looking after us in here, and I saw sweats,
crack.
I saw blood, there was like hair flying every place, and it's on and it's working. I gotta say, thank you to everyone that works in IT, and thank you to our audio engineer for figuring this out. Apparently it was an issue with caching, or...
Not accepting the EULA.
Not accepting the EULA, but you know, this is why we don't do any kind of change before anything goes live, but it's nothing that we could have prevented. So here, we're here with it. We're here. We're live. We have a guest.
We do.
And I think
welcome, everybody. And welcome to the legendary Richard Campbell.
Well, I don't know about that, but I drove down this morning.
They let you through the border.
They did. Once again, I don't understand it, but yeah. It happens regularly.
That's good, man. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, great to be down here. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited.
So what do you think of our reconditioned server room?
You guys have a shiny space, don't you? Yeah.
The fishbowl effect, and then having just enough room to fit all of us in here.
We all have a little bit of mole in us anyway. I feel very comfortable in a space
I know. It's just this weird oppressive heat that comes down.
And the Ethernet cables overhead.
Wait till the cooling fan kicks in. It's really cool.
And then you know you're home. I feel so much better about myself.
We've got the chat room just a hopping. I can't even tell if I'm refreshed here to see if I got anybody in here.
There's a few people in the room, actually. Let's see. People are seeing video. Okay, now we've got audio. It's a bit cleaner than usual, says the chat room. Apparently we've done something right. All right, so big shout out. Veronica's joined us. Frederick, Tim Barrett, CG Footman, PEI Murphy, Foul Temper. Welcome.
Love that name.
Crazy 24-hour a day has joined us. Fair Brit has joined us. Welcome. Vizio MVP as per usual. Sean Lowe, and of course Peace Drama. And of course we've got the legendary audio engineer J-Shock.
Nice.
We need to get those t-shirts made. I don't know if you were following Twitter this week. If you hadn't followed Twitter, I thought it was awesome because the suggestion is that we get t-shirts made for the Patch and Switch show that say J-Shock is our audio engineer.
Nice. Yeah.
I think we should. It's a Audio Engineer Appreciation Day.
Yes, exactly.
After you get the EULA figured out.
I didn't say it was you that had the problem. It was this show as a whole.
And apparently, Sean Lowe has a room full of people, and we are coming in crystal clear.
Oh, nice.
Surround sound.
And this is not decoration. These are real power panels, right? Like, we can just start flipping breakers and having
exactly.
some fun.
Don't lick your fingers and stick them inside those things.
These are 400 amp panels, man.
Right up above. We're thinking about running power down from the 220s up top, but we decided not to. There was a request to be able to actually have a camera suspended from there, pointing down
right.
from our devices guys. So we could put like his device on the table and do some stuff. I'm like, dude, we don't have enough inputs to be able to satisfy that. Like, we're lucky that the shoestring and the tin cans are holding together with four people in the room.
Yep.
Veronica says that the electrical panels are very Restoration Hardware.
Mostly the OSHA labels. That's what really puts it over the edge.
It's absolutely.
It's that refined bit.
Those were required because Rick's around.
Yeah. And those are real labels. Like, after we're done the show, we actually have to move everything 36 inches away from them to be back in code again.
We do. But while we're doing the show, we're far from being in code.
Oh, yes. No, never. Never. Especially, you know, we have drinks inside the server room.
Yes.
We're throwing caution to the wind. We
throw caution to the wind just bringing you into the facility.
I'm just happy every day that when I walk up to the building, my badge still works.
Nice.
You know? It's just the way it is. Just the way it is.
So, Richard Campbell, also known as the guy from RunAs Radio.
Yes.
.NET Roxy, still doing that thing?
Still doing that thing. Just we'll publish episode 1,200
about
2 weeks.
Wow. Goodness.
Yeah.
1,200.
How many episodes of RunAs do you have?
440.
I think we're up to 35. No, 56.
Yeah, you're in the
50s. Like that. Yeah.
Congratulations, guys. And not a lot of shows gets here. 50 plus shows is a lot.
Do you know the premise behind the show, where it got started from?
No, tell me the story.
Literally, a guy walked into our office. We're sitting there chatting. I think it was my office.
I think it was your office, yeah.
And we're just hanging out and talking about some stuff. And he walks in and says, "Hey, would you guys want to do a show for us?" I'm like, "What? What do you want to do?"
What are you talking about?
Like, no, seriously. Like, I want to do a show where it's just a couple of folks that work in IT that just talk about stuff.
Right.
And then see if it works. I'm like, Okay.
It's a great idea. I like it a lot.
And now we are here.
Not, I mean, we're not stealing any of the thunder from Run It.
No.
Well,
no.
Because we don't actually talk about anything real. This is your show.
I have listened to the show.
You're well aware of what we do in this show.
We don't have any commercial breaks that you have to worry about doing a voiceover for.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you heard me do that too. I got to pay the bills, man. Like, the sad part about Run As is because I've always done it. I started Run As after DNR was well underway.
Yeah.
Is it's always been sort of the redheaded stepchild, right? Like it's a successful show. It pays its own way, and we've got sponsors and so forth. We're just fine. But beside the monolith that is .NET Rocks three times a week, it's hard to, you know, be super excited about it. It's just I really enjoy the research. Like I really enjoy talking to super smart people about what they're doing and how they're making things move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the best part is just the insight that you can get. You know? I mean, that's one of my favorite things about our job when we get to go in and talk with these guys in engineering, right? And whether it's an actual video or you're going in there to learn, about some of this stuff. And of course, half the time I walk out of there going, I'm not sure I really understood that.
I don't know what
just
happened.
But the whiteboard drawing looks really cool.
And now you're here with us.
Nice. Yeah. I got a chance to tour the Microsoft data centers in Eastern Washington.
In the Quincy's.
Yeah, in the Quincy's.
Wow. And they still haven't let me in there.
There's every generation of data center there except for the containerized ones.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, They've got the classic 5.9s, nuclear bunker style data center with the locomotive side generators in the building with the big ventilation and so forth. And rooms full of batteries with the powder on the floor to collect the acid. So, and then it gets simpler as you go along. People sort of figuring out, if we just let the air flow through the building, we can use that for ventilation. And then they just go to this point and go, why do we have a building? How about a concrete pad and a fence with a dog?
And a couple of guys with AR-15s.
That's about it.
That's all you need.
Did you see the next generation one where you actually go with like robots with mounted guns?
No.
To protect. Oh, I think I spoke too much. We have drones circling over here.
There are plenty of black helicopters flying
it's
around.
Called, it's our new DAS service. Drones as a service. All right, so we should probably kick the show off and start. Normally, we have four segments.
Right.
And the first segment...
Five
if you count naming the show.
You got it.
Nice.
But the first segment is from the trenches. Things that we're doing in our day job that are IT-related, those war stories, qualify those phone that. Calls that come in,
mm-hmm.
Or not, in our case. Who's got some stories? Do you have some stories? Do you have anything?
Well, I thought it'd be nice and let our guest...
Well, we'll kick it off. I mean, no pressure.
No pressure at all.
Do you have a story about the regular day job stuff that you do?
Well,
IT-related stuff?
Yeah, so many of my customers are financial services and so forth, so they're fairly sensitive. But I did some upgrades to my data center at home. So I have about 150 racks of rack space in the house. So when you guys come up sometime, we pretty much the same experience. I mean, better decoration, but it's, but I have a proper server closet and so forth, and I added a third internet connection into the network, so I have multiple redundant internet connections into the house.
And also has the cement pad with the dogs and the fence.
Yes, exactly.
In this case, the dogs are Karen Terrier, but close.
They're ferocious, I hear.
Yeah, they're fierce. Ferocious. Fierce. I'll show you the pictures later. The dog is 5 for 5 with black bears. He's treed every black bear he's encountered so far.
Nice.
Because they're a 25-pound dog that's part Klingon. Right? Like, today's a good day to die. He doesn't care. And the bear cares. Bear gets about 8 foot in the tree, just hangs on the tree and looks at me like, would you control your dog, please? So they're Canadian bears, too, right?
Anyway, do they apologize when they go up in the tree?
they apologize when they come back down. But usually they try and go for the tip as well. Right? Oh, it's that sort of moment when as soon as I catch the dog and click the leash on, like, the bear knows the sound of the leash. Like, oh, I'm going to come down. It's like, hey, dude, just give me a minute. I'm in the bottom of the tree. Okay? I'm going to back up. And then he gets out of the tree and he's looking at me like, tip? Like, no, I'm going to let the dog go. How about that? Would you like to do that? And then the bear takes off. So we're all good. That's my backyard. So added a third 50 megabit connection into the house.
Wow. Are they all from different providers?
They are all from different providers.
Oh, wow.
So
all three Canadian providers are servicing you.
All of them. Yeah, there was a new service from one of the ISPs that came available, and they offered me a deal to bring in another 50 meg. So I'm like, okay, let's see how it goes.
I got to ask, like, what's that service call or that sales call like to use? Like, well, actually, I actually already have dual 50s in my house. Why would I need a third 50?
Yeah.
Why should I do this?
And it's not far from that. But the more important thing is the installer. Right? That's my favorite part of the whole day. So the closet is actually roll-out racks to make it more compact.
Right.
So the racks are on rails. They're mounted. And it just looks like a closet.
It's like kitchen hardware. You can open it up.
Middle Atlantic, but close. Yeah. But I've hung a little camera between the two racks. I call the holy cow cam. Because I collect pictures of installers when we open the door. Because they're really insistent about installing themselves. I'm like, you know, I could do this. Are you sure? Okay, well, it's right over there.
Let me get my remote control.
Yeah, here we go.
Hang on.
And he pops those two doors open, and then you get that picture. It's a good picture. And then we talk about, are you sure you want to install it? But it was one of those good days where all of the wires were already in place. You always think you've anticipated, but you don't really know. But it's like, no, the pole from the pole to the D-mark on the corner of the building had four extra pairs. The pole from the D-mark into the closet not only had an entire separate wire, but it was already punched down on the 104.
Oh, wow.
And so it was literally trace, 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 click, 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 drop the box in, a little bit of configuration.
Green light.
Patched into the 5304, and then it's mostly, now it's network configuration, it's routing.
So, nice.
I mean, very happy. So I had it. It was a good day.
There you go. There you go. Competent installer, apparently. Well, of course, he said everything was pretty much done. He didn't have to worry about it. But
he still called in his supervisor. As soon as he opened that door, he goes, I got to make a call.
I've got to call my supervisor.
And that guy.
And his supervisor's like, oh, you're at the Campbell
House. You're at the Campbell House.
See? And he came over, he looked in, he goes, man, this is still nicer than my CO. I'm like, yeah, I get that. There's 96 Ethernet jacks in my house, right? So.
Oh my goodness!
So yeah, we're well equipped. We can do what we need to do. I've built my own little mini cloud in there because I actually can look an Exchange guy in the eye and say, "I feel your pain." Because Exchange is if you're going to fear something, fear Exchange.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I go back to the days. This is my Exchange. I mean, I've got great Exchange stories, but
back in my day.
So we were running an MS Mail 3.2 server.
Oh.
On a 286 box,
Land
right?
Man,
right? Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And this is the time I was working for a call center, and we were going to start doing business with Microsoft, actually increasing the business with Microsoft. So we had the what did they call it? The mail connector, the MS Mail connector,
right?
Transferring email from the Microsoft servers down to our servers and doing all the translation and everything. And then they came down and they handed this documentation to me, which was a 3-ring binder, right? Which looked like it was printed at Kinko's, right? And it is Exchange 4.0, and they handed me the CD. Now at the time, you know, CD-ROMs were
this fancy.
Yeah, that was fancy, and this wasn't a printed CD-ROM. Somebody had written on this, so somebody had burned this CD-ROM of this product called Exchange 4. And they said, you need to get this connectivity running. And to me, I'm like, well, it's no problem because, you know,
it's
being
mail.
An MS Mail admin, it's just like, yeah, you just go in and, you know.
You know, in the end,
three,
it's just text files.
Four,
text files and this process that goes and looks inside the directories for the mail drop, right?
Yeah, exactly. No.
No. No. And that's pre-AD Exchange, which is even eviler.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then what happened is once they brought AD into Exchange 4, it really really started causing some things.
Yeah, no, the first couple of revs making AD work were heartburn.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's better now, and I'm still afraid.
Well, and that's kind of the story I tell now. Is like I've been dealing with Exchange for a long time, and I'll be honest with you, if I was to start a business now,
no, uh-huh. No chance.
Nope.
And, honestly,
that thing up there, that Office 365 thing, go.
Yeah, every time I patch that darn server, I'm thinking, why am I doing this?
Why haven't you migrated, man?
I haven't migrated. Well, there's a few things. One is I registered gud.com in like 1995.
Yeah.
Right? There's no three-letter domain left anymore. And it is on every spammer's list known to man.
Nice.
So I basically carry around a domain name that's a portable denial of service attack. Would you like me to crush your internet connection? I just have to change an MX record. It's very easy. Right? It's 6 to 7 million email a month come out of that. So I have it routed through a service. In fact, the organizer, and I happen to say it's MailRoute.
Yep.
When they first got going, just many years ago, somehow I ran across them. I'm like, look, I have this domain of doom. And if you want it, and nobody believes you. They just don't believe me. I'm like, listen, man.
Let's wait for those DNS records.
It's
going to
take about 24 hours for this to propagate. Yeah. You call me if it's upsetting you, and we'll do it a different way.
Nice.
Anyway, Eddie, I got a call the 24 hours. The guy's like, wow. If you don't mind, it's like there is only one valid email on that, and it's not even that important to me. So you feel free to torment yourself with that as much as you like. So, and one of the thought considerations I had was, should I move over to Exchange Online Protection? Because it would be a buck a month. There's one.
Right.
One for that domain.
I would say that we would probably almost pay you to do that so we could get the forensics of all the stuff.
And this is
through.
Exactly what MailRoute said to me years and years ago. It's like, no, man, every time we want to look at something, we look at your domain. It's just easy. And we know we're not breaking anything. It's just old.
Yeah.
Right? That's all. There's nothing good about that domain. It's just old.
Nice.
But yeah, it would be interesting to untangle that. I would have to write this whole story of moving everything out of there. But I've just launched a lot of startups and stuff out of the closet, right? Like, that's been my incubator for a ton of companies over the years.
Guh.com.
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 The sound you make when you fall on your face.
Guh. Oh, man. For me, I was. This is one of the weeks where we have a lot of stuff landing at the same time, and I'm trying to obviously speak at conferences. I'm worried about trying to get my content done to be able to give out to the field, to be able to go off and do stuff. And I've been struggling with Visual Studio Code authentication into GitHub from an IT perspective.
That's interesting.
And that's basically the whole premise of this one particular module of content that I'm making out of a bunch of them, is how do you explain Git and something as simple as Visual Studio Code to an organization of individuals or a group of individuals that really just have an aversion to opening up Visual Studio. Because in Git, you're going to be finding all the different ARM templates for Azure and JSON files. And I'm trying to level up and find better tools than Notepad to be able to edit JSON files with.
Yeah, and Visual Studio Code's derived from Electron.
Right.
Like, this is part of these really nice, lean, open source editors. They're quite a pleasure to use. Studio Code's really interesting.
So, but it's obviously not finished.
No.
It's
finished is a funny word.
Every day I start it up, I'm wondering, am I going to get the notice that says update available?
Yeah.
Or not? And is it going to break everything? And then obviously trying to find plugins and support, stuff like that, to be able to do things. So.
To actually get where you want to go.
Yeah. So I think so far I've run through the different labs and different demos for that particular module a couple times now, different revisions and trying different angles on it. I think I've got it down to a point where it's actually pretty cool. I'll be sharing them out for people that want to see them online when it's finished at some point in time. But there's that one. I've got architecting performance with Azure and IaaS stuff. I've got storage. I've got networking. All sorts of the fun stuff to be able to go out and refresh and have a new fresh face. Because as you know, cloud services rev and change the procedures and how things work all the time.
Yep.
So trying to find some up-to-date content is always a challenge, to say the least.
Bringing GitHub into an organization that's used to generally keeping everything in-house, you know, that's an interesting challenge. Have you looked at the GitHub Enterprise product?
Yep.
Like that, they've got some thoughts there, right? Most people are only familiar with the sort of free product and that's very much an individual kind of thing.
I'm actually taking an extra step, and all the templates, sample files, script files, stuff like that is actually going to be on one of my GitHub repositories.
Nice.
So the lab's going to be, okay, so now you know how to use GitHub. Here, connect to this, and then go get it.
Yeah.
And then that way, if there's a change in how the template works or a change in the PowerShell scripts that are being used to talk to Azure, I can simply update my repo, and then they can go in next time I bring it down.
Well, I guess the question is, are you accepting pull requests? Can we make changes and submit them to you?
Baby steps, dude. Baby steps, okay? You know, I am an IT guy. I'm a neophyte when it comes to GitHubs. And I actually had a couple of questions that people have already asked me. It's like, oh, I'm watching your repo. I don't see anything there yet.
Nice.
Just stay back. Wait.
I mentioned before we started about Humanitarian Toolbox. Yep. This is a charity effort we put together a couple of years ago where we're building open source software for disaster response organizations. Yep. We're actually in the midst of a project right now called AllReady, which is for the Red Cross, and it's an app to help volunteers who are installing, say, smoke detectors for folks be able to say, all right, I have a day, you know, where do you want me to go? And then we do the geolocation stuff for them, figure out where they can actually put smoke detectors in. It's great, great project, very simple thing. And we're pulling together a code-a-thon around the MVP summit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been recruiting various people to help me out with this thing, to make some contributions. We're trying to get to a minimal viable product by the MVP summit. And the funny part, of course, is because it's GitHub, I was just sort of pointing people at it, say, hey, take a look at this, see what you think. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, okay, well, look, can we talk tomorrow? Sure, we'll talk tomorrow. And in between the email exchange and the call the next day, I watched this guy start fixing code and checking stuff in and making pull requests.
That's awesome.
So by the time I actually get the call, we finally get on the phone, it's like, well, I kind of know your position on already now. Thanks for the three things you fixed. So, yeah, it's really that system set up to speak with actions.
Yeah.
Right? That when you do things, it's absolutely apparent what's going on. And it's been really exciting to, mm-hmm. to watch that evolve.
It's been cool watching a lot of the Microsoft teams using Git, the public Git repository absolutely. For stuff like the Azure QuickStart templates as an example.
Yep.
Same thing's happening. Like, templates are coming back. Templates are getting fixed. And the PMs have to go and be very responsive because in the past, they potentially weren't responsive because it was all internal kind of stuff. And then now they're on the public side. They're getting push and pull requests to be able to go into the...
It's a very different conversation.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's very... I think it's cool.
So they very quickly come around and say, oh, log in responsive, check what's going on. Oh, yeah. Oh, I like what he did there. Bring it in.
Yeah. and it's very similar. I mean, our documentation is actually stored in Git as well. And... Mm-hmm. The fantastic thing is I've been working on doing some migration from the classic cloud service world in Azure to the V2 stuff, the ARM template stuff.
Right.
And one of the first things that I needed to do, and I did that this week, was to move my site-to-site VPN connection. And so I, you know, used a document that was produced, and a buddy of mine who wrote the document, I ping her. I said, hey, you know, I'm still of the classic IT mindset that I want an infrastructure subnet, I want an external facing subnet, and then, you know, I basically, and then of course you have to have, as part of setting this up, you have to have the gateway subnet, right? Yeah. So I effectively have three, and most of the documentation only has adding two. And she's like, oh yeah, I never really thought about that. It should be as simple as adding this line and this line. And I went, okay, well, let me try it. And so I go in there and I make some tweaks, and then I know enough about it to be very dangerous and go, well, it's calling the declaration here. And this is, so I go in and make a couple of tweaks, and she's like, can you just save that and send it to me? Right. And I was just like, well, sure. Why not? I mean, if I did it and it works,
yep.
You know, there's the code. And, you know, when she sent me the original document, it was a Git file. And I was just like, oh yeah. Okay. You can make the change, make the tweak, and boom, there you go. And so I'm halfway there. The other part of the project is something that I've kind of stumbling on a little bit, which is I have an existing virtual machine that's in the old cloud service. I need to bring that into the new resource group, but it's a domain controller. And been looking at various ways. I thought, well, I'll just move the VHD over and then fire up, you know, just tear down the old VM.
Right.
Use the VHD and bring up a new one. I think that's a bigger hassle than I think needs to happen in terms of this scenario. So talking with you the other day,
it's coming.
You're like, hey, look, all we have to do is just, you can actually connect the two networks together, yeah. Right? By creating essentially VM VNet connection between the two,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
A VPN connection, and just bring up a new DC and then just to decommission the old one. And I keep forgetting, and this is we talk about it all the time when we do our sessions, basically the concept of these things are disposable now, particularly yeah. domain controllers.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm always yelling at other people who I talked to. I met one guy and he's like, yeah, this is the PDC. And I said, there's no such thing as a
yeah,
PDC. There's a PDC emulator, yeah. But and he's like, this is the BDC. And I'm like, there's not, they're yeah. domain controllers.
Well, I mean, there's the seven roles,
move yeah, them. The FISMOs, right? Yeah. You can just move them around,
yeah.
And on this secondary, I mean, this is one that lives up in Azure,
yeah,
and really only exists when I want it to. I spin it up and shut it down all the time, which makes replication just lovely. Sometimes I have to be careful. I actually have a reminder that says bring up the domain controller just to make sure that
yeah, don't let it go more than 90 days,
kind right? of
thing. Yeah,
there's a registry thing you can change on that, eh?
Yeah, there is, but
there always is. There's always some kind of
this registry. This keeps me, you know, making sure that things, yeah. thing, the demo environment never gets too stale.
Yeah.
And again, yes, yeah, correct, Tim Barrett. It is the five roles, versus the seven. But yeah, the five FISMO roles. The thing is with this is, you're absolutely right. It's just a domain controller. Just mm-hmm. bring up a new one and tear down the old one.
And
the names don't matter.
Yeah, and eventually we are talking about Republic is stating that we are having a migration plan and a tool.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm just on this edge where it's like, look, I know it's coming, and it keeps my skills sharp in just doing it. And so, you know, that's kind of my project. It's still not done.
Done.
I have all the documents.
Done.
The documents are open on my laptop at my desk.
There is no
end state.
There is
for
only
IT.
Stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is no done.
There's a break sequence in there just to check the stuff.
That particular checkbox of it's all moved hasn't been checked yet.
Yeah.
But
yeah, clear of another space. That's about all you can really say cleanly,
yes.
Right? It's like, have you finished tidying up the cabling? What is finish?
What is tidying up the cabling?
Yeah. That point where you no longer can see the front of the rack.
Yes. Yeah,
it's like, I got to dig some of this out.
Yeah, this is... this is pictures in the crew's Facebook page. And I'm trying to remember who was posting it, but basically showing... I think it was maybe JFlow... posted some stuff and he's like, this is unacceptable. My guys are going to clean it up. And then the next day you see a picture of this nice, clean, you know, all the cables run, everything else. So, yeah.
Our next segment that we have is called Beer Money. We don't have a sound for this one, right?
I could do this.
It's going to land on a belt.
Yeah. I know. Oh, there we go. No, that's random spending.
Oh, that is random spending. Well, that's
beer
okay.
Money.
Beer money.
The concept with beer money is basically the tech support that we do for friends and family because they find out that you work in IT. That's beer money.
There nice.
I can start this one off and actually say, I don't know, I have a confession to say, actually. I should probably share this with you.
Hi, my name is Rick.
Hi, my name is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Rick.
It has been less than 24 hours since I have sinned. I have agreed to purchase an iDevice.
Oh.
Not for me. For my son.
Right.
Because of some great stuff has been going on, and he's been really working hard, that sort of stuff.
And he wants an iDevice.
He's like, Dad, the 735... It's awesome. It's a selfie cam. I love it. No one else has one. It's also great. But, you know, I think I'm a big boy now. I want to have an iPhone.
Is this a social dynamics thing?
It is. Totally.
Yeah, it's very
And I'm like, don't give in to the pressure of the socials. It's like, no.
There's only one iDevice in my house.
Yep.
And it is an iPad. And it's for the wife. And the reason it's an iPad is because the best curling coaching app in the world is only available for the iPad.
I love that you're from Canada. You're talking about curling.
That's right.
A curling coaching app.
That's right. My wife is a tier two coach.
Yeah.
And so I set her up a few years ago with the right app to be able to coach her kids the right way.
Yep. Nice.
My youngest now, who's 20, is women's competitive. She actually was in a qualified.
Did she play in a tournament of hearts yet?
No, but she's qualifying. So she came in and made the semifinals for one of the first qualifying rounds to go to Scotties.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, they have to do a certain number of those.
I'm assuming that no other people that are on the podcast listening.
The two Canadians are super excited. I'm really excited for her.
But that's about that football game on Sunday.
It's like football, except the ball's 45 pounds and there's eight a side.
And you can
and
stand
brooms.
There with the beer in your hands as you do it.
Well, that brings up a good point, because when you're in between shots, you can put the beer down on the ice and it keeps it nice and cold.
It's very cold there. The ice is way colder. I love that my daughter did curling as a kid, because I would take her to practice. There's a bar in every curling rink.
Darn right.
Yeah. It's a beautiful
No, honey.
Thing.
I'll take her. It's fine.
I'll take her.
It's
good. No, I'll stay. I can stay.
You can take Johnny to softball. I'll take take her to the curling.
Vizio MVP pipes into the chat room saying he has a Vizio curling template.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Anyway, so the device is apparently going to be arriving at some point soon.
6S?
I tricked him. I did the standard parental trick, and so I actually found an old iPod Touch, like second generation or third generation device, little teeny tiny thing. I got an old phone box from an iPhone 6 that my wife bought a while ago. And I put the two of them inside, put a picture inside of it, and wrapped it up. And it's like, here you go. You've done a really good job. He opens it up. And it's like an eye. He's like, I'm like, I don't know. Open it up and look inside beyond for the piece of paper. And he's like, oh, my God. Nice. And what did he do? He spent the next four evenings watching YouTube videos.
On the phone.
On the phone and on every single case. If you want any information on any case for the iPhone 6 or iPhone 6S, my son is willing to give you consulting advice for a mere cost of $35, because that's the cost of the case that he wants to buy.
One of the OtterBoxes?
Yeah, he's actually going – there's an OtterBox lifestyle version or something like that. Apparently is the one he wants to go for. But again, Whatever.
What did we do? What did we do before the days of Amazon reviews and YouTube?
We talked to people.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Because I've never been one to buy something without making sure that what I'm buying is probably some of the best stuff out there. At least that's been my attitude of late. It started when I was building parts for PC, or when I was
Tom's Hardware.
You know, Tom's building parts good, for
yeah.
PCs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even before that, there were these things called bulletin boards.
Yes.
Right?
What was those
back in the old days.
You know, that CompuServe and Prodigy and all those things.
Oh,
and,
quick, can you do a sound effect for me there, buddy?
For the dialogue?
An air horn?
An air horn. Oh, okay. Hang on.
Mike Rigsby, that's just for you, buddy. If he still listens to us, I don't even listen to us.
I don't know if he
does. Oh, he still does.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what do we do?
You had to go and talk to people.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, I'm thinking I'm going to go with this particular video card. What do you think? Well, actually, I'm an AMD guy. I'm not an ATI guy. And
that was the original user group meets, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
After it was a little talk, we'd all get together and we'd argue hardware.
Yes.
For hours.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was the whole AMD versus Intel, and you know this was an AMD. And I was a big fan of AMD when they first came out because everything was so, you know, you get the same performance for a lot less dollar. Mm-hmm. And when you're building your own PC, that's a big deal.
Yeah. How long ago did you go to your very first user group meeting?
I think it was for a Commodore PET.
Yeah,
so that would have been 1980?
Yeah, easily. Yeah. Easily.
And I was all of 13.
Right. One Wise Geek, I am 100% with you. He says in the chat room, sat in Barnes & Noble reading books. You know what? I remember that going through my first certification, NT4 certifications, because I would go in and I would look at those, you know, because they had, you know, 18 or 19 different books on the stuff.
Yeah.
And they're $50 a piece.
Yeah.
And I would spend, you know, hours, you know, going in there and breaking them open and just kind of flipping through ones because I bought you think you've bought the one, right? and then you go in and you're like, you start reading and you're like, well, this guy says this and this guy, we've got to figure this out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I take my little yellow pad and take all the notes and I go back into my test lab and you know, try things out. Yeah.
And they take the book and you put it back and put it back on the shelf.
Right. Put it back on the shelf.
They shrink wrap those books now.
Yeah.
They do.
They do.
Because of you.
Oh, well.
Yeah. It's old man's DRM.
Yeah, yeah.
Old man's DRM.
It's the internet.
So, Mr. Campbell, beer money. Have you had any support issues in the house? Besides, now you can't talk about your server racks and the other stuff.
So I have been on a crusade.
Oh, yeah?
And that crusade is to kill every $20 and $40 Wi-Fi access point I can find. Because you have all these friends and family are complaining how crappy their Wi-Fi is. It's like you have a 10-year-old access point that's just beat, and now you have 15 devices.
They're crowding the spectrum.
Yeah,
you can't get a good signal,
and they weren't that good to begin with.
So
I've been advocating the WRT 1900 AC. It's like, look, you use your Wi-Fi access point.
Is that the
every day
a blue bezel with like two, or is that the one that looks like some kind of weird
spider? Yeah. It's got four.
Okay.
Right? But
I've got that exact same one.
It's a beautiful, and it's just so much more powerful.
Yeah.
The firmware is way smarter. It has a proper guest network. It insists on encryption. It uses WPA2, PSK.
Yeah.
Like, it's just do all the right things. But, it, you know, the main thing is just stopping someone and saying, listen, you bought that thing 10 years ago. It's fully amortized. Like, you should let it go.
You've gotten your system.
Yeah. And you have all of these devices coming and going from your house. Like, I have teenage girls, right?
Yeah.
They're not teenagers anymore. They'd have friends over. Like, that's 25 IPs easy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I would literally have a guest subnet just to isolate.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't want them wandering around my network anyway.
But you started so long ago, you probably have like a public IP 4C, B-class address for your house.
Yeah. I don't. I wish. But I do. But the switch for the multi-axis, I do route the guest network over the slower pipe.
Oh, right? Nice.
It's like, no, fast pipe for me.
Well, right. Quality of service.
Yeah, he's got quads going on his devices.
All direction around. Sorry. But this, the regular friends and family now have enough devices that those old cheap access points are screwing everything up for them. It's like,
yeah,
get rid of that thing.
Yeah.
Spend $150, $200. Get a good one. Then you stop calling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is quality of life for me.
Exactly.
Go away.
I always laugh when people come over that are IT pros, come to my house and like, okay, we're going to connect up. And it's like, oh, you've got a guest network. Oh, there's 21 other networks nearby that you can see because I'm in a condo complex.
Yeah.
So you can see all of them plus the neighboring businesses.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, look at how many are open. And I also have three open Miracasts in my building.
Oh, goodness.
I don't have to pay for anything.
No, we can push content onto their screens.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
We have some fun.
Oh, yeah. I've already taught a couple of them how to put in the code.
Yeah, I remember when the first broadband services first came along, and they were just not locked down in any way, and I was dropping files on other people's machines saying, hey, just wanted you to know. Right. Right, that's it. You should read me.
I am a friend from five doors down.
Yeah. You don't know me, but I'm in your computer.
You might know me from shows such as .NET
Rocks. Radio.
How about you, Mr. Snow? Any tech support been going on in the households these days?
No, not much. Win 10 upgrades on some devices. Just, you know, getting everything back up to speed at the house. That's about it. I took care of the Wi-Fi thing. I've got my little Asus Black Knight.
I'm sure we all have.
All happy. Right. Yeah. Actually, just updated the firmware on it just the other day because there was I noticed a little wonkiness.
Yeah.
Most likely provider wonkiness, but I noticed that the latest firmware helped with that. But I am very much along those lines of you get that stuff. I lock our devices down.
Yep.
Based on MAC addresses, the kids' devices are no longer allowed on the network at certain points in time.
It's a beautiful disciplinary tool. My children have never had, you know, min access to their own machines their entire lives. I don't even know what that is. Their reflex now, even in their 20s, is, hey, I want to install a piece of software. Would you do it, please?
Yes.
And I would just remote in a min into the machine and there you go, done.
Right.
Right? Like, that's normal for them. They've lived their whole lives like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that they're absolutely terrified because they'll come to me and they'll be like, so I went to this website and it clicked here and it brought something up. And I'm like, okay.
Fine.
Because they you know, the
first
threat
thing
over
you say
their
is,
head.
Is thank you for telling me.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Because the threat over their head is I see everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
That right? You know.
You can't get away with anything on this network.
Although, admittedly, I redirected IM traffic when the girls were like 12 years old just to see what they were talking about. Right. That will cost you IQ points. Like, you don't want to read that stuff.
No. No.
Oh, my God. Okay. But I also came to appreciate my children believe that the only reason the internet is down is they haven't done their chores.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's no other reason the internet could possibly be down.
It's like that picture I've seen on Instagram that has like a whiteboard says, these are the things that you need to do if you want Wi-Fi turned back on.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Check them off and then it comes on magically.
Yeah, it's magic.
It's like it's just a matter of a well-managed network. Actually, yeah, potentially, I've got the same writer talking about the WRTG with the two antennas that are on it. I'm actually still getting drops. Like,
really?
It's weird. I'm on the 5G network, and then all of a sudden it just kind of disappears after a while. I can't tell if it's kind of some kind of advanced weird driver that MSIT has pushed down for my Wi-Fis on my Surface Pro or something like that, but it just kind of disappears, and then I got to go drop down to 2.4, and then it comes back again and then jumps back up to the 5G. It's doing weird stuff.
That's strange, yeah.
You have to come over to my place, and I'll give you some beer.
I'm a firm believer in updating the firmware on these devices.
Oh, yeah, like, totally.
These are great angles for exploits. Mr. Hanselman, Scott Hanselman does this. He has a show called Hansel Minutes. And once or twice a year, we do a show called Hansel Minutia, which is just he and I, the same conversation we'd have with the recorders off, we just turn them on. And we had a plan to talk about the Google I.O. keynote show and so forth. And he had just come back from his favorite Subway and had discovered that his favorite Subway's Wi-Fi had an exploit, had been stuffed into it.
Oh.
It derailed the whole show. That's all we talked about for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's, he was very upset about that thing. But it's just, people aren't aware of the firmware exploit. So I'd immediately send him to the video of the Word document that did a buffer overflow into an inkjet printer and would cause the head to seek over one spot until it caught fire.
Wow.
Wow.
And it was a Word doc, right? Print this. Set fire to your printer. There's some bad firmware.
Ooh.
Wow. Man, that's crazy.
So speaking of derailing the show, I'm going to derail the show now.
What?
Well, because our next segment is usually beer talk.
He doesn't drink beer.
But you know what?
What?
He barbecues like a monster.
I was going to do that one there from the random spending.
I drink scotch.
We can
what beer wants to be when it grows up.
All right,
up.
Quickly. Quickly on beer talk.
Okay.
We're running low on beer.
Yes. I still have
not
filtered my 10 gallons of
We need to brew again.
Pills.
But we have lost our 5-gallon setup.
Yes.
How do you lose a 5-gallon setup?
Well,
we had to ship it back to our friend who moved down to the East Coast.
Oh.
Can you picture
it back.
Me showing up at FedEx with two propane burners, a 5-gallon pot set, and a miscellaneous stuff, and I'm saying, here, drop ship and just pack this for me, please.
Nice.
Here's the account number. The girl looking at me was like, what?
I have a 5-gallon pot is not small either.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's not. But you have actually invested in some new technology for the brewing.
Yes, I've picked up recently a 50-foot coiled stainless steel half-inch tube that is going to be inserted inside the other five-group, eight-gallon hot liquor tank pot is going to be turned into. A bunch of different connections, and also it's like I found this great site. I think you know the one for stainless steel stuff.
Yeah,
and we're obviously going to be looking at making an investment to replace that 5-gallon set, and we're currently under debates for which one to get and how much.
We're under financial. We're going through financial reviews.
Yes,
through the CTO offices of Beer Team 6,
and then we'll be able to bring it back to the board for a vote.
Yes, nice. The board will vote upon it, and then we'll make the investment. So yeah, I mean, you know,
it's coming.
It's coming. Soon. It's coming. All right, random spending.
Yes, the random spending.
We're looking at you now, Campbell, yes. Because both of us are in, we are on the verge of some random spending in the realm of barbecue.
Okay. I actually dug up an email specifically asking you about this from 2012.
I think I probably just brain dumped on you. No,
the response was like this big. Yeah. You must get this.
It might have been a cut and paste. It's not the first time I've had to write that email.
So, as a Texas guy, barbecue of course is life.
Well, but also brisket. I mean,
correct.
Very much a mindset.
Yes, absolutely. And brisket is, as you know, is a finicky, yes, finicky piece of meat.
Well, and for living up here, being from there and living up here, here's the problems you're going to encounter.
Yes.
You can't get post oak up here.
That's correct.
Period, done. Much but less
I can get
enough
it up
of
here.
It.
That's not a problem. Yeah. A box.
But not, it's all good. It's also having enough of it. They just burn the stuff.
Yes.
Right? They don't
it
use it.
It grows like
flavor.
Mad.
Yeah, it's trees. Right? Yes. So they just burn it. There's a very distinct thing that happens with brisket when you can burn it with hardwood, cook it with hardwood the whole time.
Right.
That we just can't do up here because we can't get enough hardwood.
Right.
Right. It doesn't make sense. You're going to use it as a flavorant, which is just a different mindset.
Yeah.
But
which I've accepted, right, given the fact that I still haven't pulled the trigger on the $2,000 $2,000 smoker.
You don't have to go
here,
that way.
But no.
Right.
You don't have to.
Have to.
But wanting to, because you are passionate about something, that's a whole other thing.
If I had a chance to start again, spits, I might approach things a little differently. You know, I've been building out my rigs for 20 years, and yep, so I have the same reason I still have a server closet in my house.
Yeah. Yes,
I have equipment that is dated that you yeah. would. I would approach it much more in an IoT way these days.
So now we are. I've got the recipes down.
Yep.
I love my smokers. Mm-hmm. I have two Weber Smoky Mountains. I've got a big one and a small one.
Yep.
And I know that you've got a big green egg, as does Mr. Claus here. we're at the point now with temperature control systems. Now, living in the Pacific Northwest is a lot different than living in Houston,
absolutely,
where basically all you're dealing with is how much humidity is in the air. It's always going to be freaking hot.
Right. Yeah.
Managing temperatures in this region from the summer through the rainy season, okay, for 11 months out of the year, you can pretty much get pretty close. But the 1 month that's sunny, all things go to hell in a handbasket.
Well, especially with the Smoky Mountains, because they don't have a lot of thermal mass.
Right.
But I've seen people up in the Pacific Northwest that have literally made sweaters for the Smoky Mountains.
Yeah, that's going a little bit too far. If you're not even using them in Canada,
yeah,
there's no reason.
I have friends in Canada that use them, but they literally put covers on them. And it's one of the advantages with the big green egg is that it's ceramic.
You've got the ceramic.
It
yeah.
holds a lot of thermal mass.
But now it's air control. It's airflow.
Wow, yes.
So let's talk.
Things get really
let's
fun
derail
at this
the
point.
Show.
Yeah. my goodness, there are so many good fan controlling systems out there.
So I've been looking at the
barbecue master,
the barbecue master.
They're the guys. Yeah,
and
they have three levels now.
Yeah.
Well, the first level, that little battery controlled single unit where you're
clearly is not in our.
That's not intro. Yeah. That's intro. That's like Home Depot kind of stuff.
Can we just set some basic rules about buying equipment? If it doesn't have an IP address, it's crap. Right?
Okay, like, and that's what I wanted to. This is what I wanted point, to ask, right? Because I have been looking at the DX2.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that I really need to have that access. Here's what I was looking for. I'm looking to basically. I've abandoned water in the WSM. Don't
right.
use water at all.
No, I think it's totally unnecessary.
Well,
was from
using
Houston especially.
Well, right. Was using, you know, the clay saucer just to help regulate
thermal mass.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But with a fan control system, you can abandon that altogether. And basically all you're doing is foiling up the little water pan that's in there so it catches the drippings.
Yep.
The DX2, the things that it is the DX, right?
Yep.
The things that I'm looking at, number one, I love the fact that it kind of has this system, and I forget what they call it, that basically monitors the meat temperature and the smoker temperature,
right,
and regulates between the two. Because once you put a 12-pound brisket inside of this thing that's cold,
yep,
right, obviously it's going to take up more heat. But then once it gets to temperature, you want to be able to regulate the temperature inside of the cooking chamber so it's not continuing to cook the meat when you're near that finishing point.
Yeah, so you want to ramp down.
Up and ramps down.
Yep, yeah, ramp up, ramp down, that whole system.
That's an important piece of this. The challenge you're dealing with as soon as you get away from the moisture trays, right, is that the ambient environment when you're working with wood is dry enough that you're going to pull moisture out of the meat.
Yep.
And the plateau of temperature, that 160 mark, that sits there for a long time, that is actually evaporation off of the meat.
Yeah.
Right? Now, the energy it takes to convert that liquid into gas is enough to keep the temperature stuck there for a long time. But you're also losing moisture from the meat, which is why normally you'd be mopping.
Yes.
Right? You're hitting...
Dependent upon the meat, yes.
Yeah.
Pork, yes. I wouldn't do it with a brisket.
Brisket... If you got a good decent fat cap on, you've trimmed it properly, so forth. I mean, you can go longer, but you're still losing moisture.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the things, like why the IoT this thing is. I'm really interested in how the humidity point changes when you actually start evaporation on the meat.
Right?
Then that's something nobody else is doing yet.
Like, I'm just talking about temperature control. You guys talk about humidity.
Oh yeah, no, I want humidity and particulate control as well. It's like, where are we in the smoke sequences too? Because we don't have a continuous stream of smoke available. We're going to burn a certain amount of flavor wood.
Yes,
and then we're going to be running on charcoal. There's the minimum amount of smoke. You've got to sort of decide how much wood you want fed into that meat.
Well, but see, here's the thing: at a certain point, you hit the point where meat can't take any more smoke. I mean, I talk to these people who are like, yeah, I've got a pork butt, and I'm going to, I'm adding wood every couple of hours. And it's like, no, it will only take so much.
Yeah, it'll turn to creosote, one or the other.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's the biggest problem is the temperature gets too high, you start breaking down the polyaromatic carbons, the things you actually want in the meat, and it actually makes it kind of rank, right?
Yes.
So the trick is ways through the plateau. You don't want to mop. You're trying to manage the fat. You don't want to use the moisture tray. Like, what are the things you want to actually do to protect that? So I have been wrapping the meat.
So I am not opposed to wrapping. In fact, I have started wrapping the ribs that I do, basically a variation of the internet known 3-2-1 method, right?
Yep.
I have given up on baby backs.
It's a waste of time.
Make
the size. Takes longer, better food.
St. Louis.
Same model.
There you go.
Three copies, two different media, one off site.
Can I ask a question? I just want to have a straight answer. Which version of the BBQ Master do I buy?
Get the DX2.
Is it the DX2 or do I get the one that has web-enabled functionality?
The CyberQ.
For an extra $120 freaking dollars.
I do love the CyberQ.
Is it worth it or not?
It's $100.
How do you feel about spreadsheets? Because I like having spreadsheets of my food. Because that's the only thing you're really going
to
do with it.
The question I have is, can I connect it to machine learning and Cortana?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, you can.
Once it's got an IP address, you're all good.
So the DX2 is the one that's able to just have the little red-lighted control panel to do the controls. You can't interface with it and do anything.
My gear, I have the older versions. I have the ProCom 4, which they don't sell anymore.
Yep.
And the main thing is it had the remote, right? Because I'm doing the overnight cooks for the brisket. And so being able to have a go to bed and have an alarm by my bed if it can't maintain temperature.
Yeah, and I've got that anyway with separate unit.
Then you wouldn't have that, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not that big a deal. But I ended up buying a separate controller with the IP address to do temperature monitoring and so forth so that I could make the spreadsheets. And it was specifically about...
But it's not the BBQ Master that's doing that.
No.
It's a different one.
It ended up being a different one for me.
So you're a multi-device failure.
It's got
redundancy.
This is more about psychotic behavior than anything. This is OCD in action. I'm not proud of this. I'm just honest, right? But for me, it was more about I wanted to wrap the meat to get through the plateau, and then I wanted to unwrap it so it still got burnt ends.
Absolutely. Because I'm heck yes.
Because I'm a snob, right? Like, I want it all. I want the crust, and I don't want to wait.
Right.
Right? So you go the first 4 hours, four to six hours, so you get to plateau. And so that was part of the additional instrumentation, why I really wanted the humidity gauge. It's like the moment you finally hit static pressure inside of the meat and it's starting to lose moisture, I want an alarm to go off.
Yeah.
Wrap it. Gotcha. Go 4 hours till you get to the breakdown point, to the 190 or so, which will go much faster. You're essentially doing a braise. Then unwrap it. Put it back in. Get your burnt ends in an hour. That's my
point. You just taught him something new with that one.
No. That's right around. I mean, look, there's a reason why wrapping it is called the Texas crutch.
Yes, it's a crutch without a doubt. It costs a bunch of time,
but it's called the Texas crutch.
Yeah.
Okay. We've been doing this for a long time, right? And I mean, if you look, how do you wrap? Do you use foil or do you use the butcher paper?
I use foil.
Now, I've been looking at the butcher paper just because of Franklin, down at Franklin Barbecue down in Texas, is like winning awards,
right?
With the and you know all he uses salt, pepper,
yeah,
and this butcher paper, and the dude sells this stuff for like $30 a pound.
The paper?
No. His brisket. Okay. His brisket. Of course, he is also you know one of these top chef masters, and
he's
and
won
and
all
so
the awards.
So
and
yeah. But competition barbecue is a whole different story because you're going for one bite. And you would not eat an entire plate of competition barbecue.
No, it's mostly they're too sweet.
Yeah,
or they're too salty. Right?
Yeah, it would crush you.
They're extremes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just like our
they're meant to
like
nail a judge in one bite.
Yeah, exactly. But see, now the chat room is just like, you know,
where did this go?
We need a new segment, is what they're saying.
They're like, that escalated quickly. and then people are like, we need this segment in every show, which would mean we need to bring in Richard via Skype or something every time just to have conversations.
This is a freebie. He just tossed us a bone.
I know, right? I know.
Well, we should come up. I think we need to do a run as the three of us.
I agree.
We'll do it for my place over the smoker.
There we go.
Let's do it.
That's the logical thing.
Let's
do
it.
Do,
so,
right?
So our question was, do we spend the extra $100? And your answer is only if you want the spreadsheets.
Yes.
Because you can track a lot of this stuff.
Which for
me,
I would. Up to about 2 years ago, I would have said CyberQ all day long, right? I was sad that I got in before it existed.
Yeah.
Now I would build more stuff. I would go way more IoT.
Well,
so and they
you
actually
build your own though.
Yeah,
right?
They do actually have all your own.
So basically, you build your own little Raspberry Pi device. You then go in and you throw in some
start looking at
$20 monitors.
Yeah. There's so many sensors.
Chuck them in.
Right?
Yeah.
The piece you'd have to take the time to really build is the fan controlling part. Right. And it's not so much that you can't control fans; you can control fans. It's figuring out all the math about how fast, how slow, what's ramp up and ramp down look like, and that software stuff. And ew. But
so buy the DX solution, which does that for you. But
then
have a separate device that
and
goes
then
off and
build
all the
your
cool
own
stuff.
Instrumentation. 100%.
All right. So J-Shock, are we hard stop at 10 a.m.?
We are not a hard stop at 10 a.m.
So we did start the show 5 minutes late.
Right,
so
we do have a little bit of buffer
time. We do have
the
5 minutes.
The band is looking very nervous over there.
Exactly.
No, I'm going to calm the band down. They've got an extra five more. Well, actually, 10 minutes at this point. Because we did derail, as normally happens when we talk about beer.
Nice.
Right.
But having barbecue. A
barbecue... Barbecue man.
Here. I want an
engineer over here, and I are just sitting back, just kind of like, oh, yeah.
This is how everybody else feels when you talk IT. Yes.
Well, it's. I'll say it's been nice for me as well because I've just had the camera one on these two going for about 20 minutes, and I can just sit back and listen.
Tim Barrett says, making barbecue with Raspberry Pi using IoT. We are geeks.
Yes
absolutely.
But and the big thing there, the real power when you start going down that path is not that I have an IP address on my smoker. It's that I might have a subnet on my smoker. That excites me. It's like
nice.
I actually have an array of measurements going on.
Yep.
Because I've got the AmeriQ, the Cook Shack, which is a tiered smoker.
Yeah.
And there's definitely behavior differences top to bottom.
Absolutely.
And I'd be able to control the auger that can power up and start putting more wood into the furnace to be able to get stuff.
All I can think of, too, is people like Rafael Rivera getting your subnet. And, oh, let's see what this does.
You're overcooking that pork. What are you doing? Pull it back.
Yes. So I think I'm going to go with the DX. I don't know that I need. I don't know.
It's
I,
only
I need
instrumentation.
All that data.
Done.
Yeah. And there's better ways to do instrumentation today.
And the reality is that if you go and look in some of these barbecue forums, there are build your own solutions that are less than $100.
Yep.
So,
the big thing is the care and feeding at that point. Right? We know this.
Yes.
The same thing happens when you build your own machine. You enjoy it, and then you have to live with it, right? They need care and feeding, and it's your responsibility.
It becomes a tender snowflake.
That's it. Well, and the reality is the Barbecue Master guys replaced a few parts on my ProCom over the years without even blinking, right? When I called and said, this is doing that, like, here comes a new one.
So would you buy it from their site or from the Amazonians?
I buy it from their site.
Yeah, I buy it directly from them.
Yeah, I like.
No price difference, though.
Yeah, go to the vendor.
Well, it's actually shipped on Amazon. It's actually shipped from them.
Yeah.
Right?
Just
get it from the vendor.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't charge shipping at all. Or
I have nothing bad to say. I've had a great experience with them. I've won my third set of temperature probes just
from time. How much time we got left?
We've got 5 minutes.
Okay, so we have to get our naming segment next.
Yeah, if everybody's eyes can now come back to normal after being glazed over with the barbecue talk. Of course, a lot of people are hungry, and I believe that they're on Yelp right now looking for the best barbecue place where they happen to be at, if they don't already know. The final segment of the show before we close out is the naming segment, where we take three random words and we name next show.
Safe for work words.
Yes, safe for work. Safe for work. And we'll take those three random words because it's too hard for us to name our shows.
I was trying to. This one was called. What was the name of this one?
Oh, we had it earlier.
He's got the picture here somewhere. Yeah, I forget the graphic. Put them on the spot.
Keg flat pack, so sorry.
There we go. Keg flat pack, so sorry. So sorry is a reference to the Canadian DEF CON levels.
Yes.
The sorry, yes. So sorry.
Sorry. Extremely sorry.
Extremely sorry. Yeah,
really, really sorry.
Yes. Three safe for work words.
All right, we've got one. Vizio MVP says barbecue wrap.
That's two. It's hyphenated.
No, it's one word. He's got it listed one word. Barbecue wrap, and that's R-A-P as in rap music. We've got herbicide.
Oh, nice.
And glazed.
Yeah, let's do glazed. We'll use Enrique's glazed. Hey, welcome, Enrique, by the way. Sorry, when we have a guest around, I have a hard time following the chat room and welcoming everybody. So just know, if you're in the chat room and you're listening, we appreciate you being here.
I think we crested above 20 today.
Nice.
We've got more than that. We actually have quite a few people who listen, just don't involve themselves in the chat room, which is fine.
Yep.
But the chat room interaction is always fantastic. It looks like Veronica had to take off for her 10 a.m. meeting, so she doesn't even hear this. But thanks for joining us, Veronica. Closing words. Because we have like 3 minutes to go before the band will fire up.
I have a plug.
All right. Plug away, sir.
We've been, since 2012, we've been doing a conference called Dev Intersection, where we've been bringing together open web people and the studio folks and so forth. And this fall, the last week of October, the week before MVP Summit, 26th to 20th of October, we are lighting up the IT side of that show. We're calling it IT Edge Intersection.
Oh. How did I not get an invitation to said show?
Talk to your cohort here, because he's speaking at the show.
I've got three sessions that are going on, that particular one.
Swipe one of them, Joey.
And it's in Vegas, too.
And it's in Vegas. It's Vegas, well, the MGM go. Grand.
Okay.
Mr. Snover's going to be there, the recently minted tech fellow.
Did you hear he went to his first high executive level meeting?
I did not.
And he wore cargo pants.
I love it.
And he's like, oops, I guess someone should have told me I needed to dress up for that.
Jeffrey. Nothing great things to say about Jeffrey. He's an awesome guy.
Absolutely.
And VP Jason Zander.
Where do they go for registration?
itedgeintersection.com.
Nice. Featured speakers up there. Good stuff. All the
great roster
schedules.
Folks. Love to have everyone out there. We're focusing on Windows 10, DevOps, Azure, you know, all the things that we're worried about these days.
Speaking of Azure, I'll do a really quick plug as well, obviously, for AzureCon coming up next Tuesday.
September 29.
I don't have a short URL for it. I should, but if you just go to Microsoft.com/Azure, you'll see the page.
I do believe it's azurecon.microsoft.com, but I'd have to look that up.
If only there was a technology.
If only there was, we could find something that would be able to do that. We have to just simply delay and don't look behind the curtain as we figure that out. Four great keynotes. They're going to be live. And
azure.microsoft.com/enus/azurecon. Just search AzureCon. AzureCon. 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is 4 p.m. UTC, Henrik, on September the 29th. It's a free virtual event. It's going to be fantastic. We've got the man, Scott Guthrie.
Seth Wauerhez and myself are actually kicking it off.
Fantastic.
I got my gig.
Nice.
I'm there.
Excellent. Excellent. We also have sessions from Bill Staples, TK Ren, I always, Ranga, talking about data, and of course Jason Zander. So really looking forward to that. There's also 60.
Yep.
Or actually above 60 on-demand technical deep dive sessions. It's going to be fantastic. I've been privy to a lot of what's happening in AzureCon. There's a lot of good stuff coming out. A lot of stuff, good stuff for you IT guys out there. It's not just, there's a lot of good stuff. I'll just leave it at that.
Where do we find you on the interwebs, Mr. Campbell?
I'm at runasradio.com.
There you go.
And, of course, my Twitter handle is Rich Campbell. That's generally where you'll find me loitering about.
You got it.
Loitering. He's loitering about. All right. So it looks like the band is about ready to go. Guys, get it going. Ah, there they are.
Dice.
So that does it again for another episode of the Patch and Switch Show. I want to give special thanks to our guest, Rich Campbell, for coming down and completely derailing the show talking about barbecue. But, you know, that's how we work.
Barbecue and Wi-Fi.
Exactly. Big shout out to everybody who joined us in the chat room. Tim Barrett, Mr. Blackswig, good afternoon, sir. Sean Lowe, CG Footman, Crazy 24-Hour Day, Frederick, Enrique, Peace Drama, Vizio MVP, One Wise Geek, Veronica, who's at her meeting, or she's not paying attention to her meeting and listening to us. Ledwig, who's in line for his iPhone 6S. Good luck, sir. Rich, Foul Temper, Fair Brit, and of course, our audio engineer, Jay Shock. Until next episode in 2 weeks' time, have a weekend, everybody.
And the studio audience goes wild.